Hello and welcome. I'm Jennifer March, and this is not your mother's story time. What was a Thanksgiving without a turkey? It was like a great flourish of accompaniment without any song. That's how Anne Mary felt about it. This week, we bring you two stories by Mary E. Wilkins Freeman. Anne Mary, her two Thanksgivings, and Thankful. Thanksgiving is a holiday where no gifts are given, yet one receives so much. Even a Thanksgiving spent alone can still find one grateful. So whether you'll be surrounded by family or friends, or alone, I hope you can find something to be thankful for. And now, Anne Mary, her two Thanksgivings. Grandma?
What is it, child?
You gonna put that cupcake into the pan to bake it now, Grandma?
Yes, I guess so. It's beat bad enough.
You ain't put in a mite of nutmeg, Grandma.
The grandmother turned around to Anne Mary.
Don't you be quite so anxious, said she,
with sarcastic emphasis.
I allers put the nutmeg in cupcake the very last thing. I rather guess I shouldn't have put this cake into the oven without nutmeg.
The old woman beat fiercely on the cake. She used her hand instead of a spoon, and she held the yellow mixing bowl poised on her hip under her arm. She was stout and rosy-faced. She had crinkly white hair, and she always wore a string of gold beads around her creasy neck. She never took off the gold beads except to put them into her pillow at night. She was so afraid of their being stolen. Old Mrs. Little had always been nervous about thieves, although none had ever troubled her.
You may go into the pantry and bring out the nutmeg now, Anne Mary,
she said presently, with dignity. Anne Mary soberly slipped down from her chair and went. She realized that she had made a mistake. It was quite an understood thing for Anne Mary to have an eye upon her grandmother while she was cooking, to be sure that she put in everything that she should, and nothing that she should not, for the old woman was absent-minded. But it had to be managed with great delicacy, and the corrections had to be quite irrefutable, or Anne Mary was reprimanded for her pains. When Anne Mary deposited the nutmeg box in the grater at her grandmother's elbow, she took up her station again. She sat at a corner of the table in one of the high kitchen chairs. Her feet could not touch the floor, and they dangled uneasily in their stout leather shoes, but she never rested them on the chair round, nor even swung them by way of solace. Anne Mary's grandmother did not like to have her chair rounds all marked up by shoes, and swinging feet disturbed her while she was cooking. Anne Mary sat up, grave and straight. She was a delicate, slender little girl, but she never stooped. She had an odd resemblance to her grandmother, a resemblance more of manner than of feature. She held back her narrow shoulders in the same determined way in which the old woman held her broad ones. She walked as she did, and spoke as she did. Mrs. Little was very proud of Anne Mary Evans. Anne Mary was her daughter's only child, and had lived with her grandmother ever since she was a baby. The child could not remember either her father or mother. She was so little when they died. Anne Mary was delicate, so she did not go to the village, to the public school. Miss Loretta Adams, a young lady who lived in the neighborhood, gave her lessons. Loretta had graduated in a beautiful white muslin dress at the high school over in the village, and Anne Mary had a great respect and admiration for her. Loretta had a parlor organ and could play on it, and she was going to give Anne Mary lessons after Thanksgiving. Just now there was a vacation. Loretta had gone to Boston to spend 2 weeks with her cousin. Anne Mary was all in brown, a brown calico dress and a brown calico long-sleeved apron, and her brown hair was braided in two tight little tails that were tied with some old brown bonnet strings of Mrs. Little's, and flared out stiffly behind the ears. Once, when Anne Mary was at her house, Loretta Adams had taken it upon herself to comb out the tight braids and set the hair flowing in a fluffy mass over the shoulders. But when Anne Mary came home, her grandmother was properly indignant. She seized her and rebraided the tails with stout and painful jerks.
"I ain't going to have Loretta Adams meddling with your hair," said she. "And she can just understand it. If she wants to have her own hair all in a frowzle and look like a wild Injun, she can. You shan't."
And Anne Mary, standing before her grandmother with head meekly bent and watery eyes, decided that she would have to tell Loretta that she mustn't touch the braids if she proposed it again. That morning, when Mrs. Little was making the pies and the cakes and the pudding, Anne Mary was sitting idle, for her part of the Thanksgiving cooking was done. She had worked so fast the day before and early that morning that she had the raisins all picked over and seeded, and the apples pared and sliced. And that was about all that her grandmother thought she could do. Anne Mary herself was of a different opinion. She was 12 years old, if she was small for her age, and she considered herself quite capable of making pies and cupcake. However, it was something to sit there at the table and have that covert sense of superintending her grandmother, and to be reasonably sure that some of the food would have a strange flavor were it not for her vigilance. Mrs. Little's mince pies had been all baked the day before. Today, as she said, she was making apple and squash. While the apple pies were in progress, Anne Mary watched her narrowly. Her small folded hands twitched, and her little neck seemed to elongate above her apron. But she waited until her grandmother took up an upper crust and was just about to lay it over a pie. Then she spoke up suddenly. Her voice had a timid yet assertive chirp, like a bird's.
"Grandma?" "Well, what is it, child?"
"Are you going to put that crust on that pie now, Grandma?" Mrs. Little stood uneasily reflective. She eyed the pie sharply.
"Yes, I be. Why?"
she returned, in a doubtful yet defiant manner.
"You haven't put one bit of sugar in." "For the land's sakes!"
Mrs. Little did not take correction of this kind happily, but when she was made to fairly acknowledge the need of it, she showed no resentment. She laid the upper crust on the board and sweetened the pie. Anne Mary watched her gravely, but she was inwardly complacent. After she had rescued the pudding from being baked without the plums, and it was nearly dinner time, her grandfather came home. He'd been over to the village to buy the Thanksgiving turkey. Anne Mary looked out with delight when he drove past the windows on his way to the barn.
"Grandpa's got home," said she.
It was snowing quite hard, and she saw the old man and the steadily tramping white horse and the tilting wagon through a thick mist of falling snowflakes. Before Mr. Little came into the kitchen, his wife warned him to be sure to wipe all the snow from his feet and not to track in any, so he stamped vigorously out in the shed. Then he entered with an air of pride.
"There," said he. "What do you think of that for a turkey?"
Mr. Little was generally slow and gentle in his ways, but today he was quite excited over the turkey. He held it up with considerable difficulty. He was a small old man, and the cords on his lean hands knotted.
"It weighs a good 15 pounds, said he, "and there wasn't a better one in the store. Adkins didn't have a very big lot on hand."
"I should think that was queer the day before Thanksgiving," said Mrs. Little.
She was examining the turkey critically.
"I guess it'll do," she declared finally.
That was her highest expression of approbation.
"Well, I rather thought you'd think so,"
rejoined the old man, beaming.
"I guess it's about as good a one as can be got. They said 'twas down there. Sam White, he was in there, and he said 'twas. He said I was going to get it in pretty good season for Thanksgiving, he thought."
"I don't think it's such very extra season the day before Thanksgiving," said Mrs. Little.
"Well, I don't think 'twas nuther. I didn't see jest what Sam meant by it."
Anne Mary was dumb with admiration. When the turkey was laid on the broad shelf in the pantry, she went and gazed upon it. In the afternoon, there was great enjoyment seeing it stuffed and made ready for the oven. Indeed, this day was throughout one of great enjoyment, being full of the very aroma of festivity and good cheer and gala times, and even sweeter than the occasion which it preceded. Anne Mary had only one damper all day, and that was the non-arrival of a letter. Mrs. Little had invited her son and his family to spend Thanksgiving, but now they probably were not coming, since not a word in reply had been received. When Mr. Little said there was no letter in the post office, Anne Mary's face fell.
"Oh, dear," said she. "Don't you suppose Lucy will come, Grandma?"
"No," replied her grandmother. "I don't. Edward never did such a thing as not to send me word when he was coming in his life, nor Maria neither. I ain't no idea they'll come."
"Oh, dear," said Anne Mary again.
"Well, you will have to make up your mind to it,"
returned her grandmother. She was sore over her own disappointment, and so was irascible towards Anne Mary's.
"It's no worse for you than for the rest of us. I guess you can keep one Thanksgiving without Lucy."
For a while, it almost seemed to Anne Mary that she could not. Lucy was her only cousin. She loved Lucy dearly, and she was lonesome for another little girl. Nobody knew how she had counted upon seeing her cousin. Anne Mary herself had a forlorn hope that Lucy might still come, even if Uncle Edward was always so particular about sending word, and no word had been received. On Thanksgiving morning, she kept running to the window and looking down the road. But when the stage from the village came, it passed right by the house without slackening its speed. Then there was no hope left at all.
"You might just as well be easy," said her grandmother. "I guess you can have a good Thanksgiving if Lucy ain't here. This evening you can ask Loretty to come over a while if you want to, and you can make some nut candy."
"Loretta ain't at home."
"She'll come home for Thanksgiving, I guess. It ain't very likely she's stayed away over that. When I get the dinner ready to take up, you can carry a plateful down to Sarah Bean's, and that'll be something for you to do, too. I guess you can manage."
Thanksgiving Day was a very pleasant day, although there was considerable snow on the ground, for it had snowed all the day before. Mr. Little and Anne Mary did not go to church as usual on that account. The old man did not like to drive to the village before the roads were beaten out. Mrs. Little lamented not a little over it. It was the custom for her husband and granddaughter to attend church Thanksgiving morning, while she stayed at home and cooked the dinner.
"It does seem dreadful heathenish for nobody to go to meeting Thanksgiving Day," said she. "And we ain't even heard the proclamation read, neither. It rained so hard last Sabbath that we couldn't go."
The season was unusually wintry and severe, and lately the family had been prevented from church going. It was 2 Sundays since any of the family had gone. The village was 3 miles away, and the road was rough. Mr. Little was too old to drive over it in very bad weather. When Anne Mary went to carry the plate of Thanksgiving dinner to Sarah Bean, she wore a pair of her grandfather's blue woolen socks drawn over her shoes to keep out the snow. The snow was rather deep for easy walking, but she did not mind that. She carried the dinner with great care. There was a large plate, well filled, and a tin dish was turned over it to keep it warm. Sarah Bean was an old woman who lived alone. Her house was about 1/4 mile from the Littles. When Anne Mary reached the house, she found the old woman making a cup of tea. There did not seem to be much of anything but tea and bread and butter for her dinner. She was very deaf and infirm. All her joints shook when she tried to use them, and her voice quavered when she talked. She took the plate, and her hands trembled so that the tin dish played on the plate like a clapper.
"Why," said she, overjoyed, "this looks just like Thanksgiving Day. Tell your grandma."
"Why, it is Thanksgiving Day," declared Anne Mary with some wonder.
"What?"
asked Sarah Bean.
"It is Thanksgiving Day, you know."
But it was of no use. The old woman could not hear a word. Anne Mary's voice was too low. Anne Mary could not walk very fast on account of the snow. She was absent some 3/4 of an hour. Her grandmother had told her that dinner would be all on the table when she returned. She was enjoying the nice things in anticipation all the way. When she came near the house, she could smell roasted turkey, and there was also a sweet, spicy odor in the air. She noticed with surprise that a sleigh had been in the yard.
"I wonder who's come," she said to herself. She thought of Lucy and whether they could have driven over from the village. She ran in.
"Why, who's come?"
she cried out. Her voice sounded like a shout in her own ears. It seemed to awaken echoes. She fairly startled herself, for there was no one in the room. There was absolute quiet through all the house. There was even no sizzling from kettles on the stove, for everything had been dished up. The vegetables, all salted and peppered and buttered, were on the table, but the turkey was not there. In the great, vacant place where the turkey should have been was a piece of white paper. Anne-Marie spied it in a moment. She caught it up and looked at it. It was a note from her grandmother.
"We've had word that Aunt Betsy has had a bad turn. Liz wants us to come. The dinner is all ready for you. If we ain't home tonight, you can get Loretty to stay with you. Be a good girl, Grandma."
Anne read the note and stood reflecting, her mouth drooping at the corners. Aunt Betsy was Mrs. Little's sister. Liz was her daughter who lived with her and took care of her. They lived in Derby, and Derby was 14 miles away. It seemed a long distance to Anne Mary, and she felt sure that her grandparents could not come home that night. She looked around the empty room and sighed. After a while, she sat down and pulled off the snowy socks. She thought she might as well eat her dinner, although she did not feel so hungry as she had expected. Everything was on the table but the turkey and plum pudding. Anne Mary supposed these were in the oven, keeping warm. The door was ajar. But when she looked, they were not there. She went into the pantry. They were not there either. It was very strange. There was the dripping pan in which the turkey had been baked on the back of the stove with gravy in it. And there was the empty pudding dish on the hearth.
"What has Grandma done with the turkey and the plum pudding?"
said Anne Mary aloud. She looked again in the pantry. Then she went down to the cellar. There seemed to be so few places in the house in which it was reasonable to search for a turkey and a plum pudding. Finally, she gave it up and sat down to dinner. There was plenty of squash and potatoes and turnips and onions and beets and cranberry sauce and pies. But it was no Thanksgiving dinner without turkey and plum pudding. It was like a great flourish of accompaniment without any song. Anne Mary did as well as she could. She put some turkey gravy on her potato and filled up her plate with vegetables. But she did not enjoy the dinner. She felt more and more lonely, too. She resolved that after she had washed up the dinner dishes and changed her dress, she would go over to Loretta Adams's. It was quite a piece of work, washing the dinner dishes. There were so many pans and kettles. It was the middle of the afternoon when she finished. Then Anne Mary put on her best plaid dress and tied her best red ribbons on her braids, and it was 4 o'clock before she started for Loretta's. Loretta lived in a white cottage about a half mile away towards the village. The front yard had many bushes in it, and the front path was bordered with box. The bushes were now mounds of snow, and the box was indicated by 2 snowy ridges. The house had a shut-up look. The sitting room curtains were down. Anne Mary went around to the side door, but it was locked. Then she went up the front walk between the snowy ridges of box and tried the front door. That also was locked. The Adamses had gone away. Anne Mary did not know what to do. The tears stood in her eyes, and she choked a little. She went back and forth between the 2 doors and shook and pounded. She peeked around the corner of the curtain into the sitting room. She could see Loretta's organ with the music book and all the familiar furniture, but the room wore an utterly deserted air. Finally, Anne Mary sat down on the front doorstep after she had brushed off the snow a little. She had made up her mind to wait a little while and see if the folks would not come home. She had on her red hood and her grandmother's old plaid shawl. She pulled the shawl tightly around her and muffled her face in it. It was extremely cold weather for sitting on a doorstep. Just across the road was a low clump of birches. Through and above the birches, the sky showed red and clear where the sun was setting. Everything looked cold and bare and desolate to the little girl who was trying to keep Thanksgiving. Suddenly, she heard a little cry, and Loretta's white cat came around the corner of the house.
Kitty, kitty, kitty,
called Anne Mary. She was very fond of Loretta's cat. She had none of her own. The cat came close and brushed around Anne Mary, so she took it up in her lap and wrapped the shawl around it and felt a little comforted. She sat there on the doorstep and held the cat until it was quite dusky, and she was very stiff with the cold. Then she put down the cat and prepared to go home. But she had not gone far along the road when she found out that the cat was following her. The little white creature floundered through the snow at her heels and mewed constantly. Sometimes it darted ahead and waited until she came up, but it did not seem willing to be carried in her arms. When Anne Mary reached her own house, the lonesome look of it sent a chill all over her. She was afraid to go in. She made up her mind to go down to Sarah Bean's and ask whether she could not stay all night there. So she kept on, and Loretta's white cat still followed her. There was no light in Sarah Bean's house. Anne Mary knocked and pounded, but it was of no use. The old woman had gone to bed, and she could not make her hear. Anne Mary turned about and went home. The tears were running down her cold red cheeks. The cat mewed louder than ever. When she got home, she took the cat up and carried it into the house. She determined to keep it for company anyway. She was sure now that she would have to stay alone all night. The Adamses and Sarah Bean were the only neighbors, and it was so late now that she had no hope of her grandparents' return. Anne Mary was timid and nervous, but she had a vain philosophy, and she generally grasped the situation with all the strength she had when she became convinced that she must. She had laid her plans while walking home through the keen winter air, even as the tears were streaming over her cheeks, and she proceeded to carry them into execution. She gave Loretta's cat its supper, and she ate a piece of mince pie herself. Then she fixed the kitchen and the sitting room fires and locked up the house very thoroughly. Next, she took the cat and the lamp and went into the dark bedroom and locked the door. Then she and the cat were as safe as she knew how to make them. The dark bedroom was in the very middle of the house, the center of a nest of rooms. It was small and square, had no windows and only one door. It was a sort of fastness. Anne Mary made up her mind that she would not undress herself and that she would keep the lamp burning all night. She climbed into the big yellow-posted bedstead, and the cat curled up to her and purred. Anne Mary lay in bed and stared at the white satin scrolls on the wallpaper and listened for noises. She heard a great many, but they were all mysterious and indefinable, till about 10 o'clock. Then she sat straight up in bed and her heart beat fast. She certainly heard sleigh bells. The sound penetrated even to the dark bedroom. Then came a jarring pounding on the side door. Anne Mary got up, unfastened the bedroom door, took the lamp, and stepped out into the sitting room. The pounding came again. "Anne Mary! Anne Mary!" cried a voice. It was her grandmother's. "I'm coming! I'm coming, Grandma!" shouted Anne Mary. She had never felt so happy in her life. She pushed back the bolt of the side door with trembling haste. There stood her grandmother, all muffled up, with a shawl over her head. And out in the yard were her grandfather and another man with a horse and sleigh. The men were turning the sleigh around.
"Put the lamp in the window, Anne Mary,"
called Mr. Little, and Anne Mary obeyed. Her grandmother sank into a chair.
"I'm just about tuckered out," she groaned. "If I don't catch my death with this day's work, I'm lucky. There ain't any more feeling in my feet than as if they was lumps of stone."
Anne Mary stood at her grandmother's elbow, and her face was all beaming. "I thought you weren't coming," said she.
"Well, I shouldn't have come a step tonight if it hadn't been for you and the cow,"
said her grandmother in an indignant voice.
"I was kind of uneasy about you, and we knew the cow wouldn't be milked unless you got Mr. Adams to come over."
"Was Aunt Betsy very sick?" inquired Anne Mary.
Her grandmother gave her head a toss.
"Sick? No, there wasn't a thing the matter with her, except she ate some sausage meat.
and had a little faint turn. Liz was scared to death the way she always is. She didn't act as if she knew whether her head was on all the time we were there. She didn't act as if she knew 'twas Thanksgiving Day, and she didn't have no turkey that I could see. Aunt Bessie being took sick seemed to put everything out of her head. I never saw such a nervous thing as she is. I was all out of patience when I got there. Betsy didn't seem to be very bad off, and there we'd hurried enough to break our necks. We didn't dare to drive around to Sarah Bean's to let you know about it, for we was afraid we'd miss the train. We just got in with the man that brought the word, and he driv as fast as he could over to the village, and then we lost the train, and had to sit there in the depot 2 mortal hours. And now we've come 14 mile in an open sleigh. The man that lives next door to Betsy said he'd bring us home, and I thought we'd better come. He's going over to the village tonight. He's got folks there. I told him he'd a good deal better stay here, but he won't. He's as deaf as an adder, and you can't make him hear anything anyway. We ain't spoke a word all the way home. Where's Loretty? She came over to stay with you, didn't she?
Aunt Mary explained that Loretta was not at home.
That's queer, seems to me, Thanksgiving Day, said her grandmother. Massey sake, what cat's that? She came out of the sitting room.
Aunt Mary explained about Loretta's cat. Then she burst forth with the question that had been uppermost in her mind ever since her grandmother came in.
Grandma, said she, what did you do with the turkey and the plum pudding?
What?
What did you do with the turkey and the plum pudding?
The turkey and the plum pudding?
Yes, I couldn't find them anywhere.
Mrs. Little, who had removed her wraps and was crouching over the kitchen stove with her feet in the oven, looked at Aunt Mary with a dazed expression.
I don't know what you mean, child, said she.
Mr. Little had helped the man with the sleigh to start and had now come in. He was pulling off his boots.
Don't you remember, Mother? Said he. How you run back in the house and said you was going to set that turkey and plum pudding away, for you was afraid to leave him setting right out in plain sight on the table, for fear that somebody might come in.
Yes, I do remember, said Mrs. Little. I thought they looked most too tempting. I set 'em in the pantry. I thought Aunt Mary could get 'em when she came in.
They ain't in the pantry, said Aunt Mary.
Her grandmother rose and went into the pantry with a masterful air.
Ain't in the pantry, she repeated. I don't suppose you more'n gave one look.
Aunt Mary followed her grandmother. She fairly expected to see the turkey and pudding before her eyes on the shelf and to admit that she had been mistaken. Mr. Little also followed, and they all stood in the pantry and looked about.
I guess they ain't here, Mother, said Mr. Little. Can't you think where you set 'em?
The old woman took up the lamp and stepped out of the pantry with dignity.
I've set 'em somewhere, she said in a curt voice, and I'll find 'em in the morning. You don't want any turkey or plum pudding tonight, neither of you.
But Mrs. Little did not find the turkey and the plum pudding in the morning. Some days went by, and their whereabouts was as much a mystery as ever. Mrs. Little could not remember where she had put them. But it had been in some secure hiding place, since her own wit, which had placed them there, could not find it out. She was so mortified and worried over it that she was nearly ill. She tried to propound the theory, and believe in it herself, that she had really set the turkey and the pudding in the pantry, and that they had been stolen. But she was too honest.
I've heard of folks putting things in such safe places that they couldn't find 'em before now, said she. But I never heard of losing a turkey and a plum pudding that way. I don't know, but I'm losing what little wits I ever did have.
She went about with a humble and resentful air. She promised Aunt Mary that she would cook another turkey and pudding the first of the week, if the missing ones were not found. Sunday came, and they were not discovered. It was a pleasant day, and the Littles went to the village church. Aunt Mary looked over across the church after they were seated and saw Loretta, with the pretty brown frizzes over her forehead, sitting between her father and mother, and she wondered when Loretta had come home. The choir sang and the minister prayed. Suddenly, Anne Mary saw him standing there in the pulpit unfold a paper. Then the minister began to read the Thanksgiving proclamation. Anne Mary cast one queer glance at her grandmother, who returned it with one of inexpressible dignity and severity. As soon as the meeting was done, her grandmother clutched her by the arm.
"Don't you say a word about it to anybody," she whispered. "You mind."
When they were in the sleigh going home, she charged her husband.
"You mind you keep still, father," said she. "It will be town talk if you don't."
The old man chuckled.
"Don't you know, I said once that I had kind of an idea that Thanksgiving weren't quite so early, and you shut me up, mother," he remarked.
He looked good-naturedly malicious.
"Well, I don't know as it's anything so very queer," said Mrs. Little. "It comes a whole week later than it did last year, and I supposed we'd missed hearing the proclamation."
The next day, a letter arrived saying that Lucy and her father and mother were coming to spend Thanksgiving.
"I feel just about beat,"
Mrs. Little said when she read the letter. Really, she did feel about at her wit's end. The turkey and pudding were not yet found, and she had made up her mind that she would not dare wait much longer without providing more. She knew that another turkey must be procured at all events. However, she waited until the last minute Wednesday afternoon, then she went to work mixing a pudding. Mr. Little had gone to the store for the turkey.
"Sam White was over there, and he said he thought we was going right into turkeys this year,"
he reported when he got home. That night, the guests arrived. Thanksgiving morning, Lucy and Anne Mary and their grandfather and Lucy's father and mother were all going to meeting. Mrs. Little was going to stay at home and cook the dinner. Thanksgiving morning, Mr. Little made a fire in the best parlor airtight stove. And just before they started for meeting, Lucy and Anne Mary were in the room. Lucy, in the big rocking chair that was opposite the sofa, was rocking to and fro and talking. Anne Mary sat near the window. Each of the little girls had on her hat and coat. Suddenly, Lucy stopped rocking and looked intently over towards the sofa.
"What are you looking at, Lucy?"
asked Anne Mary, curiously. Lucy still looked.
"Why, I was wondering what was under that sofa," she said slowly.
Then she turned to Anne Mary, and her face was quite pale and startled. She had heard the turkey and pudding story.
"Oh, Anne Mary, it does look like, oh."
Both little girls rushed to the sofa and threw themselves on the floor.
"Oh, oh, oh," they shrieked. "Grandma, mother, come quick, come quick."
When the others came in, there sat Anne Mary and Lucy on the floor, and between them were the turkey and the plum pudding, each carefully covered with a snow-white napkin. Mrs. Little was quite pale and trembling.
"I remember now," said she faintly. "I'll run in here with them."
She was so overcome that the others tried to take it quietly and not laugh too much. But every little while, after Lucy and Anne Mary were seated in church, they would look at each other and have to put their handkerchiefs to their faces. However, Anne Mary tried hard to listen to the sermon and to behave well. In the depths of her childish heart, she felt grateful and happy. There by her side sat her dear Lucy, whose sweet little face peeped out from a furry winter hat. Just across the aisle was Loretta, who was coming in the evening, and they would pop corn and make nut candy. At home there was the beautiful new turkey, and unlimited pudding, and good cheer. And all disappointment and mystery were done away with. Anne Mary felt as if all her troubles would be followed by Thanksgivings. And now, Thankful. Submit Thompson sat on the stone wall. Sarah Adams, an erect, prim little figure, ankle-deep in the dry grass, stood beside it, holding Thankful. Thankful was about 10 inches long, made of the finest linen, with little rosy cheeks and a fine little wig of flax. She wore a blue wool frock and a red cloak. Sarah held her close. She even drew a fold of her own blue homespun blanket around her to shield her from the November wind. The sky was low and gray. The wind blew from the northeast and had the breath of snow in it. Submit on the wall drew her quilted petticoats close down over her feet and huddled herself into a small space, but her face gleamed keen and resolute out of the depths of a great red hood that belonged to her mother. Her eyes were fixed upon a turkey gobbler ruffling and bobbing around the back door of the Adams' house. The two gambrel-roofed Thompson and Adams houses were built as close together as if the little village of Bridgewater were a city. Acres of land stretched behind them and at the other sides, but they stood close to the road and close to each other. The narrow space between them was divided by a stone wall, which was Submit's and Sarah's trysting place. They met there every day and exchanged confidences. They loved each other like sisters. Neither of them had an own sister, but today a spirit of rivalry had arisen. The tough, dry blackberry vines on the wall twisted around Submit. She looked, with her circle of red petticoat, like some strange late flower blooming out on the wall.
"I know he don't, Sarah Adams," she said.
"Father said he weighed 20 pounds,
returned Sarah, in a small, weak voice, which still had persistency in it.
"I don't believe he will. Our Thanksgiving turkey is twice as big. You know he is, Sarah Adams."
"No, I don't," Submit Thompson.
"Yes, you do."
Sarah lowered her chin and shook her head with a decision that was beyond words. She was a thin, delicate-looking little girl, her small blue-clad figure bent before the wind, but there was resolution in her high forehead and her sharp chin. Submit nodded violently. Sarah shook her head again. She hugged Thankful and shook her head, with her eyes still staring defiantly into Submit's hood. Submit's black eyes and the depths of it were like two sparks. She nodded vehemently. The gesture was not enough for her. She nodded and spoke together.
"Sarah Adams," said she, "what will you give me if our turkey is bigger than your turkey?"
"It ain't."
"What will you give me if it is?"
Sarah stared at Submit.
"I don't know what you mean, Submit Thompson," said she, with a stately and puzzled air.
"Well, I'll tell you. If your turkey weighs more than ours, I'll give you my little workbox with a picture on the top. And if our turkey weighs more than yours, you give me... What will you give me, Sarah Adams?"
Sarah hung her flaxen head with a troubled air.
"I don't know," said she. "I don't believe I've got anything Mother would be willing to have me give away."
"There's Thankful. Your mother wouldn't care if you gave her away."
Sarah started and hugged Thankful closer.
"Yes, my mother would care too," said she. "Don't you know my Aunt Rose from Boston made her and gave her to me?"
Sarah's beautiful young Aunt Rose from Boston was the special admiration of both the little girls. Submit was ordinarily impressed by her name, but now she took it coolly.
"What if she did?" she returned. "She can make you another. It's just made out of a piece of old linen anyway. My workbox is real handsome, but you can do just as you have a mind to."
"Do you mean I can have the workbox to keep?" inquired Sarah.
"Of course I do, if your turkey's bigger."
Sarah hesitated.
"Our turkey is bigger anyhow," she murmured. "Don't you think I ought to ask Mother, Submit?" she inquired suddenly.
"No, what for? I don't see anything to ask your mother for. She won't care anything about that rag doll."
"Ain't you going to ask your mother about the workbox?"
"No," replied Submit stoutly. "It's mine. My grandmother gave it to me."
Sarah reflected.
"I know our turkey is the biggest," she said, looking lovingly at Thankful, as if to justify herself to her.
"Well, I don't care," she added finally.
"Will you?"
"Yes."
"When's yours going to be killed?"
"This afternoon."
"So's ours. Then we'll find out."
Sarah tucked Thankful closer under her shawl.
"I know our turkey is biggest," said she.
She looked very sober, although her voice was defiant. Just then the great turkey came swinging through the yard. He held up his head proudly and gobbled. His every feather stood out in the wind. He seemed enormous, a perfect giant among turkeys.
"Look at him," said Sarah, edging a little closer to the wall. She was rather afraid of him.
"He ain't half so big as ours," returned Submit stoutly,
but her heart sank. The Thompson turkey did look very large.
"Submit! Submit!"
called a voice from the Thompson house. Submit slowly got down from the wall.
"His feathers are a good deal thicker than ours," she said defiantly to Sarah. "Submit!" called the voice. "Come right home. I want you to pare apples for the pies. Be quick!"
"Yes, Mom," Submit answered back in a shrill voice.
"I'm coming!"
Then she went across the yard and into the kitchen door of the Thompson house, like a red robin into a nest. Submit had been taught to obey her mother promptly. Mrs. Thompson was a decided woman. Sarah looked after Submit, then she gathered thankful closer, and also went into the house. Her mother, as well as Mrs. Thompson, was preparing for Thanksgiving. The great kitchen was all of a pleasant litter with pie plates and cake pans and mixing bowls, and full of warm, spicy odors. The oven in the chimney was all heated and ready for a batch of apples and pumpkin pies. Mrs. Adams was busy sliding them in, but she stopped to look at Sarah and thankful. Sarah was her only child.
"Why, what makes you look so sober?" said she.
"Nothing," replied Sarah. She had taken off her blanket and sat in one of the straight-backed kitchen chairs, holding thankful.
"You look dreadful sober," said her mother. "Are you tired?"
"No, Mom."
"I'm afraid you've got cold standing there in the wind. Do you feel chilly?"
"No, Mom."
"Mother, how much do you suppose our turkey weighs?"
"I believe Father said he weighed about 20 pounds. You sure you don't feel chilly?"
"No, Mom."
"Mother, do you suppose our turkey weighs more than Submit's?"
"How do you suppose I can tell? I ain't set eyes on their turkey lately. If you feel well, you better sit up to the table and stone that bowl of raisins. Put your dolly away and get your apron."
But Sarah stoned raisins with thankful in her lap, hidden under her apron. She was so full of anxiety that she could not bear to pull her away. Suppose the Thompson turkey should be larger, and she should lose thankful. Thankful that her beautiful Aunt Rose had made for her. Submit, over in the Thompson house, had sat down at once to her apple paring. She had not gone into the best room to look at the workbox whose possession she had hazarded. It stood there on the table, made of yellow, satiny wood, with a sliding lid ornamented with a beautiful little picture. Submit had a certain pride in it, but her fear of losing it was not equal to her hope of possessing thankful. Submit had never had a doll, except a few plebeian ones, manufactured secretly out of corn cobs, whom it took more imagination than she possessed to admire. Gradually, all emulation over the turkeys was lost in the naughty covetousness of her little friend and neighbor's doll. Submit felt shocked and guilty, but she sat there, paring the Baldwin apples and thinking to herself, "If our turkey is only bigger, if it only is, then I shall have thankful." Her mouth was pursed up and her eyes snapped. She did not talk at all, but pared very fast. Her mother looked at her.
"If you don't take care, you'll cut your finger," she said. "You're in too much of a hurry. I suppose you want to get out and gossip with Sarah again at the wall, but I can't let you waste any more time today."
"There, I told you you would."
Submit had cut her thumb quite severely. She choked a little when her mother tied it up and put on some balm of Gilead, which made it smart worse.
"Don't cry," said her mother. "You'll have to bear more than a cut thumb if you live."
And Submit did not let the tears fall. She came from a brave race. Her great-grandfather had fought in the Revolution. His sword and regimentals were packed in the fine carved chest in the best room. Over the kitchen shelf hung an old musket, with which her great-grandmother, guarding her home and children,
had shot an Indian. In a little closet beside the chimney was an old pewter dish full of homemade revolutionary bullets, which Submit and her brothers had for playthings. A little girl who played with revolutionary bullets ought not to cry over a cut thumb. Submit finished paring the apples after her thumb was tied up, although she was rather awkward about it. Then she pounded spices in the mortar and picked over the cranberries. Her mother kept her busy every minute until dinner time. When Submit's father and her two brothers, Thomas and Jonas, had come in, she began on the subject nearest her heart.
"Father," said she, "how much do you think our Thanksgiving turkey will weigh?"
Mr. Thompson was a deliberate man. He looked at her a minute before replying.
17 or 18 pounds, he replied.
"Oh, Father, don't you think he will weigh 20?
Mr. Thompson shook his head.
"He don't begin to weigh so much as Adams's turkey," said Jonas. "Their turkey weighs 20 pounds.
"Oh, Thomas, do you think their turkey weighs more than ours?" cried Submit.
Thomas was her elder brother. He had a sober, judicial air like his father.
"Their turkey weighs considerable more than ours," he said.
Submit's face fell.
"You are not showing a right spirit," said her mother severely. "Why should you care if the Adams's turkey weighs more? I'm ashamed of you."
Submit said no more. She ate her dinner soberly. Afterward, she wiped dishes while her mother washed. All the time, she was listening. Her father and brothers had gone out. Presently, she started.
"Oh, Mother, they're killing the turkey," said she.
"Well, don't stop while the dishes are hot if they are," returned her mother.
Submit wiped obediently, but as soon as the dishes were set away, she stole out in the barn where her father and brothers were picking the turkey.
"Father, when are you going to weigh him?" she asked timidly.
"Not till tonight," said her father.
"Submit!"
called her mother. Submit went in and swept the kitchen floor. It was an hour after that when her mother was in the south room getting it ready for her grandparents who were coming to Thanksgiving. They had been on a visit to their youngest son. That Submit crept shyly into the pantry. The turkey lay there on the broad shelf before the window. Submit looked at him. She thought he was small. "He was most all feathers," she whispered ruefully. She stood looking disconsolately at the turkey. Suddenly, her eyes flashed and a red flush came over her face. It was as if Satan, coming into that godly New England home 3 days before Thanksgiving, had whispered in her ear. Presently, Submit stole softly back into the kitchen, set a chair before the chimney cupboard, climbed up, and got the pewter dish full of revolutionary bullets. Then she stole back to the pantry and emptied the bullets into the turkey's crop. Then she got a needle and thread from her mother's basket, sewed up the crop carefully, and set the empty dish back in the cupboard. She had just stepped down out of the chair when her brother Jonas came in.
"Submit," said he, "let's have one game of odd or even with the bullets."
"I'm too busy," said Submit. "I've got to spin my stint."
"Just one game. Mother won't care."
"No, I can't."
Submit flew to her spinning wheel in the corner. Jonas, still remonstrating, strolled into the pantry.
"I don't believe Mother wants you in there," Submit said anxiously.
"See here, Submit,"
Jonas called out in an eager voice.
"I'll get the steel yards, and we can weigh the turkey. We can do it as well as anybody."
Submit left her spinning wheel. She was quite pale with trepidation when Jonas and she adjusted the turkey in the steel yards. What if those bullets should rattle out? But they did not.
"He weighs 20 pounds and a quarter,
announced Jonas with a gasp after peering anxiously at the figures.
"He's the biggest turkey that was ever raised in these parts."
Jonas exulted a great deal, but Submit did not say much. As soon as Jonas had laid the turkey back on the shelf and gone out, she watched her chance and removed the bullets, replacing them in the pewter dish. When Mr. Thompson and Thomas came home at twilight, there was a deal of talk over the turkey.
"The Adams's turkey doesn't weigh but 19 pounds,
Jonas announced. Sarah was out there when they weighed him, and she most cried.
I think Sarah and Submit and all of you are very foolish about it, said Mrs. Thompson severely. What difference does it make if one weighs a pound or two more than the other, if there is enough to go around?
Submit looks as if she's sorry ours weighs the most now, said Jonas.
My thumb aches, said Submit.
Go and get the balm of Gilead bottle and put some more on, ordered her mother.
That night, when she went to bed, she could not say her prayers. When she woke in the morning, it was with a strange, terrified feeling, as if she had climbed a wall into some unknown, dreadful land. She wondered if Sarah would bring Thankful over. She dreaded to see her coming. But she did not come. Submit herself did not stir out of the house all that day, or the next, and Sarah did not bring Thankful until the next morning. They were all out in the kitchen about an hour before dinner. Grandfather Thompson sat in his old armchair at one corner of the fireplace. Grandmother Thompson was knitting, and Jonas and Submit were cracking butternuts. Submit was a little happier this morning. She thought Sarah would never bring Thankful, and so she had not done so much harm by cheating in the weighing of the turkey. There was a tug at the latch of the kitchen door. It was pushed open slowly and painfully, and Sarah entered with Thankful in her arms. She said not a word to anybody, but her little face was full of woe. She went straight to Submit and laid Thankful in her lap. Then she turned and fled with a great sob. The door slammed after her. All the Thompsons stopped and looked at Submit.
Submit, what does this mean? Asked her father.
Submit looked at him, trembling.
Speak, said he.
Submit, mind your father, said Mrs. Thompson.
What did she bring you the doll baby for? Asked Grandmother Thompson.
Sarah was going to give me Thankful if our turkey weighed most, and I was going to give her my workbox if hers weighed most, said Submit jerkily. Her lips felt stiff. Her father looked very sober and stern. He turned to his father. When Grandfather Thompson was at home, everyone deferred to him. Even at 80, he was the recognized head of the house. He was a wonderful old man, tall and soldierly, and full of grave dignity. He looked at Submit, and she shrank.
Do you know, said he, that you have been conducting yourself like unto the brawlers and the taverns and alehouses?
Yes, sir, murmured Submit, although she did not know what he meant.
No ungodly maid who heeds her elders will take part in any such foolish and sinful wager, her grandfather continued.
Submit arose, hugging Thankful convulsively. She glanced wildly at her great-grandmother's musket over the shelf. The same spirit that had aimed it at the Indian possessed her, and she spoke out quite clearly.
Our turkey didn't weigh the most, said she. I put the revolutionary bullets in its crop.
There was silence. Submit's heart beat so hard that Thankful quivered.
Go upstairs to your chamber, Submit, said her mother. And you need not come down to dinner. Jonas, take that doll and carry it over to the Adams' house.
Submit crept miserably out of the room, and Jonas carried Thankful across the yard to Sarah. Submit crouched beside her little square window set with tiny panes of glass and watched him. She did not cry. She was very miserable, but confession had awakened a salutary smart in her soul, like the balm of Gilead on her cut thumb. She was not so unhappy as she had been. She wondered if her father would whip her, and she made up her mind not to cry if he did. After Jonas came back, she still crouched at the window. Exactly opposite in the Adams's house was another little square window, and that lighted Sarah's chamber. All of a sudden, Sarah's face appeared there. The two little girls stared pitifully at each other. Presently, Sarah raised her window and put a stick under it. Then Submit did the same. They put their faces out and looked at each other a minute before speaking. Sarah's face was streaming with tears.
"What are you crying for?" called Submit softly. "Father sent me up here, 'cause it is sinful to make bets. And Aunt Rose has come, and I can't have any Thanksgiving dinner," wailed Sarah.
"I'm wickeder than you," said Submit. "I put the revolutionary bullets in the turkey to make it weigh more than yours. Yours weighs the most. If Mother thinks it's right, I'll give you the workbox."
"I don't want it," sobbed Sarah. "I'm dreadful sorry you've got to stay up there and can't have any dinner, Submit."
Answering tears sprang from Submit's eyes.
"I'm dreadful sorry you got to stay up there and can't have any dinner," she sobbed back.
There was a touch on her shoulder. She looked around, and there stood the grandmother. She was trying to look severe, but she was beaming kindly on her. Her fat, fair old face was as gentle as the mercy that tempers justice. Her horn spectacles and her knitting needles and the gold beads on her neck all shone in the sunlight.
"You had better come downstairs, child," said she. "Dinner's most ready, and maybe you can help your mother. Your father isn't going to whip you this time, because you told the truth about it. But you mustn't ever do such a dreadful wicked thing again."
"No, I won't,"
sobbed Submit. She looked across, and there beside Sarah's face in the window was another beautiful, smiling one. It had pink cheeks and sweet black eyes and black curls, among which stood a high tortoiseshell comb.
"Oh, Submit," Sarah called out joyfully. "Aunt Rose says I can go down to dinner."
"Grandmother says I can," called back Submit. The beautiful, smiling face opposite leaned close to Sarah's for a minute.
"Oh, Submit," cried Sarah. "Aunt Rose says she will make you a doll baby like Thankful, if your mother's willing."
"I guess she'll be willing, if she's a good girl," called Grandmother Thompson.
Submit looked across a second in speechless radiance. Then the faces vanished from the two little windows, and Submit and Sarah went down to their Thanksgiving dinners. And that's our stories for this evening. I hope you've enjoyed Anne Mary, Her Two Thanksgivings, and Thankful. Have a wonderful Thanksgiving, and thank you for listening. I'm Jennifer March, and this is not your Mother's Storytime.